Your home for everything Arizona Cardinals. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Big Red Monday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by Ramos Law Firm at RamosLaw.com.
Happy Monday, all you football fans in the Valley, or I guess as happy as you can be, given the fact that the Sun Devils and the Cardinals have now combined for 8 consecutive losses.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Isn't that good?
There's another level.
Yeah, both have L4 as a trend going on.
Do you see this big giant bald spot in the back of my head?
No, I actually don't. Oh, there it is, Vinny. I see it.
That's because both teams gave me opportunity to pull my hair out this weekend.
Brother. We're going to call it a Welp Monday. That'll suffice. Right straight from David Johnson's Twitter account.
Welp. ..
That's where we're going to start, right? So I don't know, man. How was your weekend otherwise?
It was okay.
I binge sleep. Slept this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, I did a lot of work and watched a lot of football, and I was tapped out early.
Yeah,
both nights.
I would have binge slept.
Yeah,
but I had a long work day on Saturday. I just kind of tried to relax yesterday. I had some family time yesterday, which was cool.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, we got a lot to get into. The Arizona Cardinals have lost another football game. There is a lot of consternation now for their defensive coordinator. I suppose we should just get the show started.
Yeah, why wait at this point, right?
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
All right, as we mentioned, the Arizona Cardinals lost by 10 points officially to a 49er
team. Sorry, betters.
Yeah, to a 49er team that they had on the ropes. The defense, once again, just failing miserably to close out an opponent at the end of a game.
If I only watched Jimmy Garoppolo play against the Arizona Cardinals, I would think he's a damn Hall of Famer.
Kind of like watching DeAndre Ayton against ASU.
Yeah, you would think he was the number one overall. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, right. That's my point, right? No, but
yeah,
you're right about it.
Yeah, because DeAndre Ayton only played good against ASU in college.
Jimmy Garoppolo, okay, no, but he played monstrous against ASU.
He did.
Okay, that's all I'm saying. And Jimmy Garoppolo does look like that guy against the Cardinals. Whether he just feels more comfortable, whether the defense is that inferior, yeah, they've made quite a player out of Jimmy G.
And even though Jimmy G tried to give it away through one of the worst picks you'll see all season in the red zone, that was a key, you thought it was a key point of the game.
Yeah.
Bottom line for me is this, Bick. We talked about it briefly with Doug and Wolf when we had that crosstalk segment. I'm tired of talking about improvement. Improvement to me at this point of the season when you're in games, find a way to win one of them.
Yeah.
Against a really good football team in San Francisco.
There's a very, it's the dividing line between what to feel good about and what to be angry about. It's very clear now. It's almost as clear as the difference between offense and defense. And that's what's happening now.
Yeah, but I think during the course of the show, I'll just let you in on one of my talking points today, too.
Uh-huh.
I'm not completely absolving the offense in
this
either.
Good. All right, also in week 11 in the NFL, I don't know what you thought were the big takeaways other than the Baltimore Ravens. Mercy. Just annihilated the Texans.
I know I've been leaning towards Russell Wilson and the MVP chase.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I'm not leaning that way anymore.
No, you shouldn't.
Lamar Jackson is superhuman. And what they did to Houston, 41-7.
Uh-huh.
Leaving no doubt against another good AFC team with a dynamic quarterback. That was... That was clinical what they did.
It really was. And then you pair that with the Patriots barely winning against the Eagles and Tom Brady complaining about the Patriots offense. You wonder if the AFC hasn't shifted. At least I do. So there you go. Interesting, kind of interesting week 11. Not a lot of great headline games coming out of the week, in my opinion. But there you go. Over the weekend in college football, ASU, where do you want to begin with that game?
You got to start for the two-point conversion decision / play call was baffling.
Yeah.
Perplexing, troubling. I think you do desperate things when you're trying to win a football game.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was desperate. I mean, the game situation lent itself to kick the extra point, tie the game, play some defense, because
they
had the momentum.
Yeah.
Again, it was a really uneven performance by ASU, a lousy defensive first half. They shored things up in the second half. They had the momentum in that game.
They did.
And you can certainly justify going for two there in a situation where you are incredibly overmatched. The North Carolina-Clemson game from earlier this year comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
North Carolina with about a minute 17, if memory serves.
Mm-hmm.
They went for two against Clemson. They failed. I liked that decision. There was a minute 40 left.
And the defense had churned out three and outs.
Yeah, and there was an opportunity to kick the extra point, tie the game, get the ball back with time and timeouts to
and operate, and win
it in regulation.
That's where I fell on this, and I heard Herm Edwards say just the opposite, that it was kind of a no-brainer because they had just driven down pretty much the length of the field and the moment. To me, when you drive down the length of the field and your defense is taking control of the game, the other team looks at that two-point conversion as a chance to, okay, look, let's just stop them on one play and we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it at all, Vinny, and that's not revisionist either. I did not like that. I thought it was just a desperate move to try to, I don't know, I didn't like it. And now this ASU team is in danger of not making a bowl game.
Yeah, you don't expect them to win against Oregon. And hey, who's better right now, ASU or U of A? I'll listen to both sides, because I don't think either team is very good right now.
Yeah.
And the uncertain nature of that rivalry game, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
ASU doesn't make a bowl game, and Herm Edwards was on with Doug and Wolf today, and he answered the question. Yeah, it would be devastating not to win a bowl game. That's what you play for. And when you're talking about every week, well, we're playing this many freshmen this year, those bowl practices are enormously important to your development.
And no doubt.
They've let this opportunity slip through their hands.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. Also in college football over the weekend, the major story is what happened to Tua Tagovailoa at the end of the first half of Alabama's win. Alabama was up 35-7 at the time. And the question became, why was Tua Tagovailoa still in the game? The honest-to-God answer is that Alabama is in that zone right now where the eye test mattered. So they needed to put forth a whopping, resounding victory. And I hate that they were in this spot, because that had to lead to it. Because this idea that, oh, you know what? We need him to work on the two-minute offense because we're playing Auburn in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What good is working on a two-minute offense against a defense you've already ripped up for 35 points? What good is that going to – what is that going to teach you?
You know what, Bick? I am not the world's biggest Nick Saban supporter or fan. I didn't have a problem with Tua being in the game there. I really didn't. It was going to be his last drive.
Uh-huh.
He would have been out of the game had it been a different situation. But they wanted him to work on a two-minute drive because he has missed time.
He was injured going into the game.
No, he was cleared to play.
He was cleared to play.
Football. Okay, he was good enough to play. He was good enough to build a 35-7 lead.
I know. I was watching the pregame to that, and everybody was speculating, is he even going to play today because he doesn't look right? All right, whatever. I do agree. It's not egregious, but the logic they used to describe it, to me, I hated the logic. The injury is terrible for college football.
Well, terrible for two. I mean, you injure a hip, it's not great.
No.
And now they're describing it to be very similar to Bo Jackson's hip injury. That ended his football career.
Yeah,
I feel terrible for
him.
Bo
Jackson's a running back, though.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe as a quarterback it won't be as devastating, but...
Look, Neil Lomax is a quarterback that wore this Cardinals uniform, and his career was ended by hip issues, too. So it's one of those joints that is just very complicated. And unfortunately, I'm speaking from experience
this. That's a good point.
It derailed my NFL career, I'll tell you that.
All right, Arizona loses to Oregon over the weekend as well. Tonight, big game for the Phoenix Suns, taking on the Boston Celtics.
We are at a point, Bick, where the Phoenix Suns and the Arizona Coyotes are the saviors of the mental well-being of the Valley sports fan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I can't wait for tonight's game. Watched Boston a little bit the other night against Golden State's G League team. I think it was their G League. Oh, no, it was actually their NBA League team. They struggled in Oakland the other night. I guess when you get on a long West Coast road trip, you're going to have those peaks and valleys, and that was certainly a valley. They came away with a 5-point win, but the Celtics are one of the better teams in the league.
Yeah.
But I'm confident if the Suns play a good, solid, you know, in their brand of basketball, we're going to have another competitive game in downtown Phoenix tonight.
Yeah, I like that. All right. And you wanted to mention the Coyotes as
Coyotes are also at home tonight hosting the L.A. Kings. Big week, big win over the weekend, a 3-0 win over Calgary that had a little bit of everything, which might show up again in hardware.
Oh, okay, good. Wink, like that. Wink. Like that. All right, that's kind of the outline for a Monday. You know what we do on a Monday? We visit with Cliff Kingsbury at some point in the show. That will happen again today. We will bring you your normal football coverage coming out of yesterday's loss to the 49ers, starting with Big Red Reacts.
Yes, we do.
Bickley and Murata. Big Red Reacts. Reaction to yesterday's Cardinals game. Presented by Arizona Central Credit Union.
Hang on a sec. I'm not ready.
All right.
Oh, that's good. I love the way you preface that. We all know what goes on a Monday.
Yeah, no, right. No.
Apparently we don't.
Yeah. You plow right through the splash. You didn't even towel off.
Yeah, I'm still not ready.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that would be our fault, Eric. You're right. Our bad. Good Lord.
Cardinals at 49ers, Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. And it was a good, good start for the Arizona Cardinals. And the first play we get to highlight for you today is history. A pass interference call that did not get called on Richard Sherman on a pass to Christian Kirk in the first possession for the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury decides he's going to challenge it.
Murray with a shotgun snap, drops back to throw, looks deep, takes a shot, far side, got a receiver, and it hit Christian Kirk in the shoulder pad, and it's incomplete on the far sideline at the goal line.
After reviewing the play, there's defensive pass interference, number 25, defense. It's at the 3-yard line. Please put 11:56. Clock is correct at 11:56. First down.
Yeah, I gave
the Cardinals field is overturned. It is pass interference on Richard Sherman. It'll be first and goal for the Cardinals at the 3. We talked about paying off a drive, and now you can with 11:56 to go in the first.
That was New York's way of going, man, we really jobbed this team last week. No, it wasn't.
It was their way of saying that Richard Sherman's very involved in the Players Association. Let's get him.
Oh, I like that.
That's his theory on it.
Yeah, I saw that.
First and goal at the 3. Cardinals score on second down on a 2-yard touchdown pass to Charles Clay, except for bullet number 1 in the foot of the Cardinals this week. Offensive pass interference on Christian Kirk. That moved him back 10 yards, second and goal at the 12-yard line. They only get 4 yards on their next two plays and typically have to settle for this.
26-yard field goal try by Zane Gonzalez to give the Cardinals the lead. Pass interference by Richard Sherman put the ball on the 3. Offensive pass interference took the Cardinals off schedule. And now the field goal try is on the way, and it is good.
3-0 at that point after the 26-yarder by Zane Gonzalez. San Francisco, nothing going on their first drive. 3 and out, 5 total yards. They punted back. Cardinals take over at their own 19. They methodically drive down the field. Once again, get into the red zone. First and goal on the 5-yard line after a second pass interference call on Richard Sherman. This time, the Cardinals were able to cash it in.
Shotgun snap to Murray, fakes the handoff, fires to Fitz, and the left side is wide open for the touchdown. Nobody covering the Hall of Famer. Larry Fitzgerald scores, and it's 9-0 Cardinals, 4:04 to go in the first.
That's what I love right there. Kyler Murray said, wait a minute, you're not going to cover the Japanese fighting fish? What do you say we just go ahead and throw it to him?
And they did, and they scored. The score would remain 9-0 because Gonzalez missed the extra point. So 9-0. 49ers on their second drive. Once again, couldn't do much. They got to the Cardinals 40-yard line. They punt. They actually went out on downs, 4th and 5 at the 40-yard line. Cardinals took over. They couldn't do much. Into the second quarter we go. Cardinals first possession of the second quarter. What do we have here? They take over on their own 43-yard line. Once again, get into the red zone. And once again, have they solved the red zone problems? They were able to make it count.
Three receivers to the left, second and goal on the 5. Murray and shotgun, Drake in the backfield. Snap to Murray, fakes the run, throws left side, caught by Cooper at the 5, cuts right, and in, touchdown, Pharaoh Cooper. And the Cardinals continue to roll here in the first half. They lead 15-0.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Extra point, 16-0 at that point. All right, stop it right here, Bick.
All right.
To this point, the first quarter and 6 minutes of the second quarter, easily the best, most complete stretch of football we've seen on both sides of the ball by the Cardinals.
Yeah, they made moving the ball look effortless, and they were shocking the 49ers and their fans.
Yeah, and Cliff Kingsbury, especially with the play calling, the execution, he had Robert Saleh, the much ballyhooed defensive coordinator of the 49ers, on his heels. It was a clinic at that point.
Yeah.
And I tweeted as much, and I said, yeah, there's still a lot of football to be played. And after the 49ers took over on their own 25-yard line, first pass of their next possession, Garoppolo hit Richie James for a 57-yard completion. And I think a lot of Cardinal fans at that point had the, uh-oh, here we go. I think we poked them. We poked the sleeping bear because a few plays later, the 49ers were able to get on the board.
Shotgun snap. Garoppolo drops back, throws left side end zone. Touchdown. It's Ross Dwelly, the tight end, who was wide open to the corner of the end zone with Murphy and Buda Baker staring at the receiver as he makes the catch.
Yeah, Dwelly filling in for the injured George Kittle.
Yeah.
He put the 49ers on the board. Kind of a sign of things to come. 16-7 at that point. Cardinals ended up punting on their next possession. 49ers took over with 4:46 to go. They were able to, once again, get points right before the end of the half after an 11-play, 55-yard drive. Chase McLaughlin connected on a 43-yard field goal. Dominant first half for the Cardinals. They went into the locker room only leading by 6.
Yeah, yeah. But, and again, it's I did not like the way they allowed San Francisco to get back into the game. But in terms of putting a good first half out there, I thought that, okay, let's capitalize and take this thing home.
Yes, but San Francisco would have the ball first in the second half, and once again, they drove with relative ease, taking over on their own 16. They got a big play to Tevin Coleman, a 37-yard pass that also tacked on 15 yards on a roughing the passer penalty by Zach Kurt. Not the way you want to start the half. 49ers with the ball, second and goal at the Cardinals' 5-yard line, and here we go again.
Second and goal on the 5. They shift the running back Coleman from wide left into the backfield, and Garoppolo's back to pass. Has time. Throws to the right. Wide open is Dwelly. Touchdown. Nobody covering him. Don't know what the Cardinals were doing there. The game is tied now. Extra point pending. 11:07 to play in the third.
Well, that's what you do if you're San Francisco right there. Line it up and run the scissors play. Made perfect sense.
It was a really good play call by Kyle Shanahan. Great execution. The Cardinals looked totally baffled by that play call.
Yeah.
Because I'm conditioned now in watching this defense in that situation, second and 5, you almost can guarantee it's going to the tight end. Yet there was nobody within 12 yards of Ross Dwelly there. 2 touchdowns for him. His first 2 as an NFL pro. The Cardinals have now given up 12 touchdowns to opposing tight ends this year.
And the Cardinals were brutalized by, like you said, that great play call. There's a screen pass to a fullback that Ron Wolfley probably was going gaga over. Yeah, the tight ends, my takeaway on this, Finney, and I know it's not always been Hassan Reddick, but yesterday it was a couple of times. He's so undersized, and
on that play, size had nothing to do with it.
I know that.
His head was literally, well, it wasn't literally spinning.
It was.
I caught myself.
It was metaphorically.
It was metaphorically spinning.
Yes,
it may as well have been literally spinning.
Right, might as well have been. But to me, that was sort of kind of indicative of the broader pattern of fail number 1 draft picks. And I know Hassan's a good guy, But this, to me, yesterday was a symbolic of that failure in particular.
At that point, I know I felt this way. I'm like, floodgates are open. This is going to get ugly. After that, I had a family function to get to. Turned off the TV and said to my son, this
Is
going to be a blowout.
Uh-oh.
But I was wrong, because the Cardinals did go 3-and-out on their next possession. Cardinals drove deep into Cardinals territory, or the 49ers drove deep into Cardinals territory on their next possession. Third down and 5 at the Cardinals 12-yard line, and Jimmy G did a Jimmy G thing.
Snap to Garoppolo, short set, looking left all the way, throwing left, intercepted at the 10-yard line. It's Hicks bringing it back to the 20, 30, 40. Hicks at the 50. Hicks' third interception as a Cardinal, and he takes it back to the 45-yard line of San Francisco. Finally, somebody made a play, and it's Jordan Hicks, third pick of the year.
Good play by Hicks, because those passes that are right to you as a defensive player are usually the toughest ones to catch. And Jimmy Garoppolo had no idea Jordan Hicks was standing there.
Yeah, clearly.
It looked like an easy pick. The Cardinals did turn it into points. They drove into the near the red zone, but had to settle for a 43-yard field goal. So the Cardinals bounce back, take the lead, 19-17 at that point. Then the 49ers take over. They drive down the field, and once again, it was Jimmy Garoppolo on first and goal at the 2-yard line, finding an open receiver for a touchdown.
Snap to Garoppolo, drop to throw, fires over the middle, touchdown Bourne. Niners back in front. Made that look easy, 23-19.
Yeah, they would go for two at that point. They missed on the attempt to Kendrick Bourne, so it was still 23-19. 12-14, that's when the Cardinals take over on their next possession. Very efficient drive there, led by Kyler Murray. They overcame a couple of, at least one penalty on the illegal shift penalty there, and converted on a third and two. They got to the 22-yard line, first and 10, and we saw K1's wheels.
Shotgun snap. Murray quarterback run to the left. He's at the 20, to the 15, to the 10. Murray's going to score. Touchdown. And the Cardinals have the lead back on a Kyler Murray 22-yard touchdown. He's thrown for two today. Now he's run for one with 6.5 to go.
How big is it to run the inside zone? Red run.
All right, my thought on that play after watching it and the Cardinals retook the lead, my thinking at that very moment was, wow, he faked Nick Bosa out badly on that play. Mm-hmm. And I flash back to going into their first meeting in Glendale. Nick Bosa was coming off the monstrous game on national television.
Was NFC Defensive Player of the Week, 3 sacks, interception, deal.
And it kind of triggered this discussion. Did the Cardinals do the right thing? What if they wouldn't have? What if they'd have done... The two games against the 49ers at that moment made me go, okay, for now, the Cardinals got the better of it because Kyler Murray produced 51 points in two games against the 49ers, while Nick Bosa was largely handled. That was
a little better yesterday.
A little better.
But
largely quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
Not an impact player.
Not the monster player that we had seen in glimpses last year. I totally agree. And there's a theme there that we can get back to later on in the show. 26-23, 3-point lead. Remember that missed extra point. Should have been a 4-point lead at 27-23, but that missed extra point looming large. San Francisco takes over. They drive down the field again. Jimmy Garoppolo passing right and left, going right down the field. And then on a 3rd and 7, just outside the Cardinals' red zone, this happened.
Garoppolo back to pass, goes over the middle behind the intended receiver, and a diving interception at the 5-yard line. It's Jalen Thompson, the rookie out of Washington State, with a pick, and he takes it back to the 25-yard line.
4-point lead at that point. Cardinals with the ball. 4:32 to go.
Yep.
And an opportunity to melt a lot of clock. They were able to melt a little bit of the clock, but they didn't do much with the ball. They ran on first down. Drake got 4 yards. Drake got 1 yard on second down. Third down passing situation. Murray gets sacked for a loss of 11 yards. So they ended up taking 2:20 off the clock there, but they didn't do anything with it. They didn't pad the lead, so they have to punt it back to the 49ers. So under the two-minute warning, and actually with 54 seconds left, 49ers need a field goal to tie things up. 3rd and 3 at the Arizona 28, and a bit of a controversial play here.
Shotgun set, three receivers to the left and one to the right. Snap to Garoppolo. Looks left, throws left. It's caught. Is it a first down? It's going to be close at the 25. And, boy, what a spot that was in favor of the Niners.
That's horrible. Challenge it.
Under 2 minutes, can't challenge. They did review it. The call on the field stood.
Yep.
It's the inexact science of spotting a ball.
Yep.
Watch the replay 100 times just like everybody else, and maybe I've got a biased viewpoint on it. I didn't think Dwelly got the line to gain. I really didn't.
I thought it was really, really close. I think it was it fits the narrative of getting job to say that it, I don't know. Like I said, those things are you get what you take what you get with those things. I agree with you. It didn't look like he had gotten the line, but at the same time, I didn't think it was egregious.
Yeah, so that set up a first and 10 at the 25. 49ers still need a field goal and a tie. They weren't satisfied with it, as they proved on the next play.
And the clock is moving now. Blitz coming up the middle. Garoppolo gets rid of it over the middle. It's caught at the 20, at the 10, the 5, touchdown. The Niners take the lead. Oh, my goodness, what on earth happened? What happened there? Jeff Wilson, who's barely played today, somehow got open over the middle of the field, and the Niners are in front with 31 seconds to go.
Yeah, that was a crucial play right there, which we'll spend a lot of time talking about today. So that put the Niners up 30-26. Cardinals get the ball back. Still with time, 31 seconds to go. Does Murray have a little magic in him? Well, the magic was extinguished pretty quick there.
31 seconds to go. Murray back to pass. Looks over the middle, throws complete to the 30-yard line, and they got to call a timeout here. The ball comes out. The Niners have the football. The officials haven't signaled yet. Clock has stopped with 25 seconds left. They say it's Niner ball. A takeaway by Tart.
Yeah, Keyshawn Johnson with the fumble there. Tart did come up with the recovery. 49ers couldn't get a first down, so the Cardinals took over on downs at their own 22. And a wild last play that really pissed a lot of people off in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Influence the betting. Kyler Murray back to pass. Dumps it off to Fitz over the middle. He's running far side of the 30. Throws it back to the near side to DJ Humphries, who just lets the ball go as he didn't catch it. They dive for the ball. Somehow the ball squirts out of there. It's picked up at the 5-yard line and into the end zone for the touchdown. So San Francisco gets a touchdown by DJ Reed at the buzzer. This is going to matter to somebody in Vegas.
Yeah, because it ended up being a 10-point bulge. If you had the Niners minus 10, oops.
Yeah, right. It's a good name for a band.
Oh, man. Oh, what a game. 36-26, the final. We're just diving into it.
Oh, yeah.
At the beginning here from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center. On this Big Red Monday, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Big Red Monday with Bickley and Murata, presented by Ramos Law Firm at ramoslaw.com. Your home for everything Arizona Cardinals. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
No, I was trying to win. You know, I mean, he was moving the ball. You know, we wasn't getting much pressure on the guy, so I was trying to generate pressure, obviously, and we had a guy free, and Jimmy made a play. I mean, he's off his back leg. He made a nice play to his halfback, so it was a well-timed call and a well-done job by Jimmy. But we're trying to win games. I wasn't going to leave here and not try to win the game, and that's the deal.
That's Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator, who's under a little bit of fire for that decision yesterday to bring the blitz there. I will say I agree with Vance Joseph there. The 49ers had the perfect play dialed up for what the Cardinals were bringing defensively.
Yeah.
And the result could not have been more disastrous.
Yeah.
But the bigger, and I didn't like the decision to blitz. Some people will say, okay, I like the aggressiveness there. That's fine. We can have our difference of opinion. I think everybody's agreed that if you are blitzing, you might want to have your best pass rusher as part of that blitz. Now, all the pressure came up the middle. Chandler Jones, as you'll hear in this soundbite, where Vance Joseph was asked, was dropping Chandler Jones an element of surprise there.
Well, no. I mean, he wasn't really a dropper. He was a pill guy, you know. And he dropped a couple of times today. But no. I want to always rush Chandler. But sometimes you have to, you know, do that with certain pressures. But you know, again, it didn't work. So that's my fault.
Now, hold on. I don't understand that response.
To me, that intimates that Chandler Jones made the decision to peel off on the running.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Okay. Again,
if that's the case, then it's a communication issue.
Let's bottom line this here. What we're seeing this year is recurring themes of this team getting beat, and most of the themes are happening on defense, from secondary that allows quarterbacks to look like Joe Montana to tight ends that all look like Mark Bavaro. These are recurring themes of what we're seeing. There is a shortage of talent on defense that is Steve Keim's fault. That, to me, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I want to be very, very clear of what I feel about this. And that is, his number one gamble is working, and he sabotaged his own risk-reward by putting a defense out there that is not capable of playing NFL defense for 60 minutes. So there's a big talent issue. But I also said, and have been on record because I know this and I believe this to be true, that at endgame situations, the calls made by defensive coordinators, particularly if and when to blitz, can be very, very instrumental in the outcomes of games. It's part of the reason why I love Todd Bowles as much as I do. Todd Bowles wasn't always great at what he did, but if you gave him the lead and you gave the other team the ball, he was not going to let a quarterback breathe. And he rarely got burned by it because he called the right blitzes. He did that to the Cardinals. After the Bucs scored controversially at the end of the game, the Cardinals couldn't do a darn thing because Kyler Murray couldn't breathe. So at that point in time, it's incumbent for Vance Joseph to call, to either not blitz or call the right blitz. And if you've got Chandler Jones peeling back into coverage, I don't understand this. Now, let me see. I'm going to tell you why I didn't buy this response here. Jeff Wilson Jr., for the 49ers, I watched the play 100 times. Mm-hmm. He ran a really deceptive good route. It looked like he was just going to do a quick peel flare, and then he just, boom, up the field. He would have smoked most anybody on that route. I don't know why Chandler Jones would decide mid-play like that to cover a guy. I don't dig it. So my point is this. Zero blitzes, bring in heavy pressure up the middle. I'm fine with that, but I don't want Chandler Jones in key coverage situations.
But why there? When you've got a three-point lead and you're trying to protect that three-point lead, your worst-case scenario should be we're going to go to overtime,
mm-hmm.
right? You're at the 25-yard line.
Uh-huh.
That's where I don't understand bringing the heavy blitz there,
okay.
Just in concept.
I don't mind it because I the way the 49ers were going, the way the secondary has been, I really don't have any confidence in this Cardinals team to prevent an offense from scoring in an endgame situation. So
nor should you.
So philosophically, I'm fine with it. I just think he called the wrong blitz, and by that I mean any blitz that has Chandler Jones peeling off trying to cover a running back in a key moment of the game. I'm not down with it. I'm just not. And so this partially falls on Vance Joseph as well, and he deserves the kind of heat he's taken. I don't really like his response there. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, here was Vance Joseph, and all this sound courtesy of azcardinals.com. Vance Joseph asked on whether or not he'd label this a frustrating loss.
Oh, absolutely it's frustrating because the guys want to win, and you watch how hard they play, so it's not a lack of effort, you know, of trying, a lack of work during the week. It's a lack of finish, and that starts with me.
Yeah, there's no other way to label this other than frustrating. When it was right there for you, you know, we haven't even talked about, you know, squandering a 16-point lead, which is another trend that continues. When the Cardinals get double-digit leads, they are routinely given up in a very fast fashion.
Listen.
And that starts with their first win of the year
exactly
in Cincinnati.
Right. You're exactly right. I would say one of the big victories of this season is just the amount of double-digit leads the team has had. That was not anywhere near the case in recent years. That shows you how good this offense has been at times. That's the shame of it all, in my opinion. If Steve Keim would have fielded a real defense, this team would be in playoff contention right now. It's a very crowded NFC playoff field, and they would be part of it if they'd have a defense that could have shut down teams at the end of the games. That's what bothers me so much about this. That's why a lot of my optimism that I feel towards this team has been tempered over the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's games you have to win.
Here was head coach Cliff Kingsbury after the game on that last touchdown by the 49ers.
I'll have to watch the film to see it closer, but it looked like the running back did a nice play, and Jimmy made a good read, and they executed.
That was Jeff Wilson's second catch of the year.
Yeah. But I mean, if you go back and watch the route, it is a big-time route. It really, you could see why a guy like Chandler Jones would have a hard time dealing with that, which is why he shouldn't have been trying to cover him in the first place. And it was a perfect play call against what Vance Joseph was bringing. And even if Chandler Jones wasn't trying to cover this kid in space, say Chandler Jones just came upfield, the guy would still be open. You would have still had to have accounted for this kid somehow, some way, strategically. So having Chandler Jones rush the quarterback in that situation doesn't mean that play wouldn't have worked. It would mean that guy would have been wide open unless they would have accounted for a running back peeling out of the backfield.
Yeah, here's Hassan Reddick, linebacker, after the game, talk about what specifically is wrong with the defense at this point.
It's just little things here and there. It's our first year in the defense, and I believe, you know, once we have more time and we get, more time to gel together, more time to really understand the defense and what we have to do, I think we're going to be really dominant. You see it out there like a team today. I think they had like 35 rushing yards or something like that. I didn't see it towards the end, but we're getting better in certain areas, and there's other areas that we have to work on to get better in as well.
With all due respect to Hassan Reddick, I don't think it's little things at this point. When you're going into week 12, I don't think it's little things. I think it's big things. There hasn't been much in terms of improvement in this defensive scheme.
That's the other thing.
Here's some numbers, by the way.
All right.
Cardinals opposing quarterbacks, 297 of 418, 71.1% completions, 3,273 yards, 29 touchdowns, 6 picks, quarterback rating of 113. If that was a stat line that belonged to one individual, it would be right up there with Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Patrick Mahomes, and even better than Lamar Jackson's numbers. None of those quarterbacks individually this year has more than 23 touchdowns. The Cardinals have given up 29.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
That is definitely
The question we need to get back into is what you just said there. The thing about the defense also, they have not gotten better as the year's gone on.
No, not at all. And you could point at the rushing yard total, and it was low, and that's a win, I guess, against San Francisco. But they were down by 16 points. They had to throw to get back into the game.
Right, exactly.
Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast. It's brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Coming up next, you thought that was the only frustrating football loss by a Valley team over the weekend? Oh, not so fast. We'll get into Saturday's festivities next. It's Bickley and Murata on this Big Red Monday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Big Red Monday with Bickley and Murata, presented by Ramos Law Firm at ramoslaw.com. Your home for everything Arizona Cardinals, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Daniels under center. They toss it to Benjamin. Benjamin heading left. He's not going to get there. Now tries to reverse his field and throws the ball toward Brandon Ayuk, and it is intercepted in the end zone, but there is a penalty marker down. They tried to run it with Benjamin, and he had no prayer, so he was going to try to reverse his field, and then and just threw a desperation heave toward the end zone to the opposite side.
Downfield, 73, the offense. The penalty is declined. The result of the play is a touchback.
Prior to that play, the Arizona State Sun Devils had a 12-yard touchdown pass from Jaden Daniels to Brandon Ayuk to pull to within 1 point of Oregon State, 35-34. What you heard right there was the two-point attempt that failed, ended in a penalty, and basically ended the game. Now, to realize everything that was going on, there was a minute 40 left in the clock, and ASU had outplayed Oregon State substantially in the last 30 minutes of that ball game. They opted to go for the win there. I was, I filled in for Jeff Munn hosting Sun Devil Sound Off after the game. We took a lot of calls, and there were a lot of frustrated Sun Devil fans, not just with the 4-game losing streak, but that decision to go for two in that situation was not exactly popular with the Sun Devil fan base. Oregon State was able to run out the last 1 minute, 39 seconds, even though ASU had timeouts remaining. I do get the desperation of a team that hasn't won in 36 days was the span between wins at that point, and that losing streak continues. But I didn't like the decision in real time, and I still don't like it 48 hours later.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. I'm exactly with you on the tone of that game. ASU's defense dominated the second half. At that point in the game, they had
Oregon State had 98 yards of offense in the second
half. Right, and so once again, this game, as Herm Edwards said this morning, was more of the same of ASU having to play catch-up football, and I think maybe that process affected their thinking at the end of the game. I agree with you. At that point in time, the way the game is trending, a little patience and a little trust and to keep rolling with what's hot, which is your defense, is the way to go rather than to give Oregon State the chance to redeem themselves with one play. And then there's the play call, which either you and I didn't like, and then the pathetic attempt to throw the ball at the end of the play knowing it wasn't going to work.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is, okay, they come to the conclusion. They said after the game, here was Herm Edwards. We'll play this and get this out of the way. This is from Doug and Wolf this morning, the head coach of ASU, explaining the rationale, decision-making, in the decision to go for 2 points.
After an 11-play drive, just felt like we had momentum going into that. We go 90 yards in 11 plays. We convert a fourth and eight for the touchdown and just felt at that point in time with the momentum and the situation of the game, go for two. Force them all of a sudden to play from a deficit and have to at least try to get in the field goal range. And the field goal kicker had not been playing well. We had just gone three series of defense playing three and out. So for me, it wasn't that hard of a decision. When we got the ball on the 10-yard line coming out, I said, if we score, we're going for it.
Yeah. That's what worries me. The logic here seems to be flipped here to me, because the fact that your defense had churned three straight three and outs should make you confident to keep playing and extending the game and get your tie right at that moment. And the fact that they didn't, just kind of like that to me, the logic that he uses in there, they had to convert a fourth down to make the score. So it's not like they were rolling.
Yeah, but if you kick the extra point, the pressure is still on Oregon State's field goal kicker, who's the worst in the conference.
Yeah.
Jordan Shuker is 2-for-7 this year.
Yeah.
As long as field goal's 30 yards, you got to get way down the field to attempt a 30-yard field goal.
Yeah. No,
that's the 12-yard line.
Right.
That's the 12-yard line.
That's right. That's right.
The pressure is still there.
We are not arguing about this. I think this is I think there's more desperation. I think that play call underscores a desperation that Herm Edwards and his easygoing demeanor kind of deflects very easily. Because look, man, this football team has now lost three games to teams that were sub 500 at the time. You can't do that and build a program. At one point in time, they were 5-1, and it was, what bowl are they going to? Are they going to play for the conference championship? And now they're 2-5 in conference.
You confident in saying that ASU is going to beat U of A in 2 weeks?
No, of course not.
By the way, the Pac-12 has said, this is how important this game is. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff.
8 p.m.
for the Territorial Cup.
What could possibly go wrong?
There will be, I don't know, 19 people in the stands by the end of that game.
That's true. That's very, very true.
So let me say this.
Yeah.
Not only the decision to go for two, ASU shows that they're going to go for two. Oregon State calls a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a chance to talk it over. That's the play they came up with. A toss play to Eno Benjamin. Now, if you want to talk about moment, they couldn't deal with Brandon Ayuk the entire game.
Yep.
Jaden Daniels had a really good game in returning from injury.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to put the ball in either one of those guys' hands?
With you.
Eno Benjamin, but again, he crippled their chances to win with a fumble at the goal line earlier in the second half.
That was terrible.
That was a terrible play. But they have not been able to block and create room for Eno Benjamin all season long. And that's the play they drew
up. It's one of their great failures. So you're exactly right. They have nothing has come easy for him. He's had no room to run ever, and that's the play you come up with. It's a shame, because you look at Oregon State, and the scene after that game was insane.
Yeah, they stormed the field for beating ASU.
They're 5-5. But look, that new head coach, they were as dead as dead gets in the Pac-12, and they've rallied.
They're an improving team.
They are. And they feel really good about what they've done, given who they are. I don't blame them. I think, conversely, I look at this and go, what the heck happened? Well, maybe what happened was, as you pointed out many times, those marquee wins weren't real marquee wins. Michigan State's turned out to be pretty yucky.
Mark D'Antonio's going to get fired. That's how bad the Spartans have been this year.
So maybe we just all were drinking too much of the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, the 5-1, it's nice on paper. Did I feel great about it? No, I knew the schedule was going to get tougher, but I thought ASU was better than this.
Well,
the last three times they've had 4-game losing streaks or longer, Bick.
Yeah,
they've all started when the Sun Devils were 5-1. Every single time.
That's crazy.
And they have a chance now to duplicate the dubious 2016 season, Todd Graham's second to last year, 5-1, lost 6 games to end the season. That is a possibility right now for the Sun Devils. So year one, I think we were all very much on the train, for lack of a better term.
Uh-huh.
There's some room on the train if you want to move around and switch seats right now. That's just my sampling of ASU fans. All right, coming up, Cardinals lose in frustrating fashion as well to the San Francisco 49ers. It's Big Red Monday. We'll open up the phone lines next, 602-260-9870. Your thoughts on the Cardinals' loss coming straight up. Also want to remind you, Disney's Frozen 2 hits theaters on November 22nd, but we're giving you the chance to see it before anyone else. Just text DAD, D-A-D, to 620-620 and sign up to receive the monthly Big League Dad newsletter for your chance to win a family four-pack to see the advanced screening of Frozen 2. Once again, that's DAD to 620-620. Coming to you live from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.